Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna again and again, because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics, the great chanters of Vedic hymns, and the great followers of Vedic principles cannot achieve any fruitive result without dedication of such great qualities to the service of the Lord. So, purport. Advancement of learning, a charitable disposition, political, social, or religious leadership of human society, philosophical speculations, the practice of the yoga system, expertise in the Vedic rituals, and all the similar high qualities in man serve one in the attainment of perfection only when they are employed in the service of the Lord. Without such dovetailing, all such qualities become sources of trouble for the people in general. Yeah. And here we have some very, very great workers of distinction, some very powerful people, Napoleon Bonaparte, Alexander the Great, and of course there was also the Roman Empire, and somebody, Butler or somebody, was describing Napoleon, and it said, the prizes he sought were jewels and thrones, and the dice he cast were human bones. Yeah. So they would, you know, when Napoleon returned from exile, he came back and he was walking there with his personal dedicated guard, and there'd be like 400 people. So they sent an army of like 2,000 people out to stop him. And then he got off his horse and walked unarmed up to them and said, "I am your emperor. You know, I've come back. If you want to shoot me now." And they would look at him, you tense moments. And then somebody started screaming, you know, "Vive l'Empereur," and all 2,000 soldiers, you know, threw their rifles on the ground. And then finally the officer who had been his officer before, then, put his saber on the ground and walked on a kneel before him. Okay, you know. So then they went, and within, I think it was 3 weeks, he had something like 100,000 or 400,000 soldiers and so on. You know? So Napoleon, Alexander, but all these problems, he would march 40,000 people to their death. You know, it was unbelievable. You know, so all these good qualities and all these people, if you look at them, Napoleon, Alexander, Caesar, Hannibal, all of them were dissatisfied. All of them were dissatisfied. You know, so without dovetailing all these good qualities, you know, a charitable disposition, because they were all charitable people. After Alexander had conquered, these guys coming from the Persians, he conquered his, he got his wife and daughter, and then he told his men something like, if anybody even touches her, they'll die, you know, a death worse than you can imagine. And he protected them very, very, like a great gentleman, you know, protected them and so on. So in the end, they were more attached to him than they were to their own son, their own husband, you know. So great charitable disposition, great political, social, religious leaders, philosophical speculations, you know, people with incredible abilities like Sir Isaac Newton, other people, practice of yoga systems, expertise in Vedic rituals and similar high qualities, you know, can only be useful if you use them in the service of the Lord. Yeah. What happened here? Okay, yeah. And so these are examples. Okay. Then Papa goes on. Everything can be utilized, either for one's own sense gratification, or in the service of one other than oneself. So here's the basic principle, that we can think about how to gratify my senses with whatever abilities I have. And we all have different abilities. I'm sure you stop and be just honest, you know, not, you know, too artificially humble. We all have different qualities, abilities, and how we can do things. So we can use them for our own sense gratification or for somebody else. You know? But then Prabhupada makes a further distinction. There are two kinds of self-interest, okay, also. Namely, personal selfishness, and extended selfishness. But there is no qualitative difference between personal and extended selfishness. Okay. Theft, for personal interest or for the family interest is of the same quality, namely criminal. A thief pleading not guilty because of committing theft not for personal interest but for the interest of society or country has never been excused by the established law of any country. People in general, Prabhupada says, have no knowledge that self-interest of a living being attains perfection only when such interest coincides with the interest of the Lord. So we have a picture of a very, very famous thief, like that, the butter thief, and his accomplices, like that. So, you know, Prabhupada says this stealing principle is a fundamental principle. He said, children like to steal things from other people's houses. He said it's a natural tendency to feel like you have something or some friendship or association like that. So, but it's natural. So all these tendencies to be a great speculator, to be a very, very aesthetic, intuitive abilities in art and culture, to be a very, very creative liar, all these things that they can achieve perfection when they coincide with the interests of the Lord. So the Lord's also interested in lying and stealing and sense gratification, And he's also interested in extended sense gratification. Actually, he's the most extended sense gratifier. So it's a very subtle art in how to dovetail all these things with Krishna. Okay. Prabhupada goes, for example, what is the interest of maintaining body and soul together? One earns money for maintenance of the body, personal or social. But unless there is God consciousness, unless the body is being properly maintained to realize one's relation with God, all good efforts to maintain body and soul together are similar to the attempts of the animals to maintain body and soul together. So here down below we have the picture of two Peruvians duking it out to see who's going to be the predominator here, the survivor. There's one dog in the audience back there. But that's all what it comes down to. You mentioned before we heard that the animals in the zoos were very frustrated, angry. They would become depressed and wouldn't take any care of their bodies and this and that and die and stuff. So they started this process that every night the bear goes into his little cave and I guess they lock the door up, and he has a good night's sleep. Then they open the door up in the morning and the bear comes out, I guess, with a little light and stretches and scratches his back a little bit, And then all over the habitat, they have some place there with like some trees they put up and rocks and stuff, and people can walk along, the platform and look at the bear or the bears and his habitat. But then they put food. They put food up in the tree. They put food under a rock, and they hide food all over the place. And so the bear has to spend all day trying to figure out, like, okay, they got to get this, way up in the tree there, and how do I get up there? And, doing things. And actually, they're quite creative. They'll push things here and there. They'll do different kinds of activities then. And so he spends all day, hunting for food. And then he feels comfortable. It was a good day. He feels like, it was a productive day, I spent a whole day looking for food, And he doesn't feel frustrated. He feels like he actually is living like a useful life, Okay, then once a year, a little romance, a little romance with Fifi or whoever it is, Cinnamon, something like that, But that's it. That's the animal's limited intelligence, It's a good day when I can fill my belly and scratch my back a little bit and, lie in the sun, take a good maybe a swim or a bath, Actually, they have actually some higher sentiments, animals too. You see that in the natural environment. They actually, even there, there's some like higher sentiment, And of course, when you're in association with a devotee, when you're in association with people, those can actually manifest quite a bit, depending on how much the soul is awake within that body, that tamasic body. But a human being, once he's satisfied the basic necessities for survival, it's not enough. he has like higher sensibilities, you know, and unless those are satisfied, they cause irritation, they create tension, they create agitation, you know. And so then he tries to, you know, eliminate them by smoking, drinking, or something, or smother them, or satisfy them, expanding his nation, expanding his family, expanding his immortality to his, you know, his what do you call it, immortality to his dynasty, you know, immortality to his countrymen and his nation, like that, and so on, you know, yeah, and. You know, maybe those some benefits, you can think about those in the future, or it would be some benefit for you. But for the most part, of course, they're finished with the body. That's the whole thing. And so, whether we're concerned with Krishna's satisfaction or not, in this level, many times, the thing is, well, just think about immortality. You know, at least think about liberation. At least think about, you know, lasting benefits. And then we come to those kind of things, and even still we're not satisfied. You know, tattvam, what's it called? Brahmati, paramatmati, bhagavaniti, sabdite. That's really how it starts. Tattvam yaj ganamadvayam. Ganati, anyway, it begins with that. That the sages who actually know the truth know that this non-dual substance actually exists in three categories. You know, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. You might say this like ice, water, and steam. You know, steam. You know. Same thing. So Brahman, okay, we realize I'm immortal. We realize that. And different philosophers, scientists, they express this kind of passion that they realize that, you know, you and I may die, brother, but the revolution will go on, you know. Different things. You see, it's Brahman, Sat. There is a reality, you know. Chit. Then we begin to see distinct illusions. Yeah. Okay, this may disappear or that may disappear, but Rome is an eternal idea in the mind of the gods. You know, and stuff. The Roman Empire was actually, it's quite amazing. You might even say it was like a manifestation of Krishna in some ways. You know, Krishna says that, whatever is great. It extended all the way around the Mediterranean, all the way over to England, half the way up England. And then all the way over into the Middle East, taking over, what's it called, the Hare Velasa's people, those guys, Armenian empires and stuff like that. We're looking at one thing on the YouTube, it's the history of the Roman architecture. It's very interesting. You know, they had a very sophisticated cement. You know? They were building these unbelievable monuments and roads and aqueducts, you know? The architects are saying that if we had, that we could not, you know, build the things they did and the time they did, with the tools they had, you know, we couldn't even do it without some of the most recent, you know, computer developments, you know, some of the domes they built and everything else like that. And so Rome had like something like about 1 million people. Imagine this, like, you know, maybe to 100, 200 after the birth of Christ or something, a city of 1 million people. And of course an empire with unbelievable things like that, and so on. So all of this, there was some religious activity, there was worship of demigods, and there was this idea that, well, things may come and go. We've seen emperors come and go, but Rome, you know, Rome is an eternal idea in the mind of God. So some aiming for transcendence, sat-chit. You know? Not only is it eternal, but it's a city. It has a heart. It has a character, a spirit, you know, like that, and so on. So sat-chit, we realize that male and female distinctions are eternal. In this world, they may be perverted this way and that way, but somebody in the female body, when they're realizing this idea of motherhood, this idea of being a chaste, you know, chaste wife, you know, giving your heart and soul to some boy, you know, even as a devotee, you realize it's external, but these are eternal manifests of eternal relationships, and by playing out this role properly, I can begin to appreciate then who is Radharani, what is this female potency, you know? So then sat-chit, and finally ananda, you have a full relationship, you know, with Krishna, you know. So this is the point that if we can dovetail these things properly, we can realize these things. You know, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, And even if we just realize Brahman, then at least we're more than the animals, because now we've come to a level, you know, beyond the temporary world. Okay, all good efforts to maintain body and soul together are similar to the attempts of the animals to maintain body and soul together. Where is my cursor? Cursor, come back. Oh, something's happening here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The purpose of maintaining the human body is different from that of the animals. Yeah. So here see Balaram maintaining his personal body. Yeah. Beating up his brother's enemy. So on. Okay. Yeah. So we can participate in all these purposes of, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in terms of Krishna. Similarly, advancement of learning, economic development, philosophical research, study in the Vedic literature, or even the execution of pious activities, like charity, opening of hospitals, and the distribution of food grains should be done in relation with the Lord. The aim of all such acts and endeavors must be the pleasure of the Lord and not the satisfaction of any other identity, individual or collective. So very, very basic ideas. And again, of course, we've heard this even in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, from our point of view, is ABC. It's the beginning, you know. But right there in the very beginning is that, you know, Krishna tells Arjuna the same things. And then in the first canto, you know, there's a sutra to the sages, and the sutra says the same thing. They ask him, what is the essence of dharma? And he says the same thing, that dharma is meant to, you know, to give liberation. Dharma salusita pumsham vishvaksena kata suya no pareyadya divatim shrama eva hi kevalam. And not only is it meant to give liberation, you know, dharma sya hi apavargasya, but then beyond that, it's meant to inspire an attraction for hearing about Krishna. That's the purpose of doing your varna ashram as a man or a woman, as a kshatriya or a brahmana, is liberation. You know, not for some gratification in this world, but beyond that, it also can allow you then to come to this paradharma, to hear about Hari, to hear about Adhoksaja, you know, to hear about Achyuta. You know? So in the beginning, it's talk in general about he who resides everywhere, he who never falls down, he who is the greatest friend of his devotees. You know? And we'll see in these prayers by Sukadeva Goswami, he doesn't talk about Krishna directly too much. You know, at least liberation, at least a person. Where my cursor go? There it is now. Okay. The Bhagavad Gita 9:27, the same principle is confirmed where it is said that whatever we may give in charity, whatever we may observe in austerity, whatever must be given over to austerity must be given over to the Lord or be done on his account only. The expert leaders of a godless human civilization cannot bring about a fruitful result in all their different attempts at educational advancement or economic development unless they are God conscious. And so this is the thing, is of course sometimes all these things about educational development, economic development, it's all for very, you know, what's like obviously exploitive, you know, motive, that people are only doing this because they want something very, very gross out of it. Again, like Rome, during this construction, 30% of the population of Rome was slaves. And 30% of the population of Rome was slaves. And they had like 20,000 people, you know, working on these construction projects and so on. But then, what is it? You know, we want these slaves to be educated. You know, they were very qualified people, and architects and sub-architects, contractors in charge of this kind of thing or that kind of thing, scaffolding. You know, you see it was a very sophisticated process, and it was being passed down for hundreds of years, actually. As Roman architecture was being passed down for hundreds of years, and the dome of, I forgot what it was, Trajan built one place, with a big dome, and it remained the biggest freestanding dome in the world for something like, you know, like 9 centuries, over 900 years, or even more than that. Nobody came close to this thing, you know, so on. And so educating these people, and economic development, okay, then they should be fed properly, they should have proper clothing. Because we've got to understand that, you know, that these people are not going to be motivated to work properly. So we use the word slave, but probably, you know, to have been a slave in the Roman Empire may have been a better job than being like a free, you know, worker in one of these modern big cities. You may have been better taken care of. You may have had better entertainment. You may have better situation for family planning and your children. You know, but being taken care of, you know, like an indentured person. Nowadays, it's even a worse situation that people are working like slaves and everything else, but they're not really taken care of in that sense. So, but the motivation is still, you know, for our glorification. And the movie in architecture was pretty much making the same point throughout the whole thing, that pretty much every single one of these persons, Trajan, Caesar, Nero, you know, they really wanted to do this to leave their mark, which they did, you know. It was for their ego, for their enjoyment, not even sometimes, many times it wasn't even for their enjoyment in their lifetime. Sometimes it was. Nero was an egomaniac beyond belief, you know. Even they finally killed him. But actually he burned down Rome so he could claim it, as it appeared to be. He burned down half of Rome and he claimed one third of it for his own palace, you know, so on. So, but beyond that, many of them actually lived not very riotous lives, but they wanted to be famous in posterity. They wanted to have some long-lasting fame like that. So all this stuff, you know, the extra-religious of a godless civilization, you know, is aiming at some kind of personal or extended, you know, view within a small perspective, but only becomes successful when it's aimed towards Krishna. Yeah. Prabhupada says, and to become God-conscious, one has to hear about the all-auspicious Lord as he is described in literature like the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada says Bhagavad Gita is the culture of the intellect, and the real culture of the soul starts with Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is basically aimed at liberation. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha yishtam imasachaha. That's the whole thing. Arjuna is worried about getting simple reactions, and in the end Krishna tells him, the conclusion is, surrender to me and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. So you're liberated, and then okay, the problem is solved and everything else, then real life historically and everything else pretty much begins, you know, after the battle of Kurukshetra, when things become kind of regulated, and then we can start to see the manifestation of Maharaj Parikshit, and the manifestation of real, you know, real spiritual culture. And of course Srimad Bhagavatam then takes it through, you know, the different Manus, and the different Lila avatars and Ramchandra, and then finally the 10th canto, then we see Krishna. You know, we're really spoiled because by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada we can realize these very subtle relationships with Krishna. You know, you maybe think back before we came in contact with Lord Chaitanya's movement, what do we know about, you know, spiritual life? You know, maybe something very, I remember one time I just had this realization that until I met Prabhupada it was like a very kind of very low level glow. Like, you know, in the morning time when the first light comes and you can just see a little bit, you know. Like it says, the snakes and the thieves are starting to disappear. You can walk around without falling, you know, fear. But you can't see much yet. You can't read, you know, or anything else like that, you know. So until we came to Prabhupada, all of spiritual relationships were like that. There was some idea of Jesus Christ or the Prophet Muhammad, you know, or things like this, but very, very dull. You know? But then by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, then we see things very clearly. You know, we get a real taste, and then after that we learn how to build, you know, the proper background, proper basis, you know, to make these little experiences, you know, mercy experiences into our standard life, you know? And then have hope at the time of death. We can negotiate that bad experience and come out in a better place. You know, maybe take birth as in the womb of a Braja Gopi, like that, or something. Be a squirrel or a peacock or a little bird or a flower in Vrindavan, and then play with Gopal. And so that's the actual Prabhupada's purport and text, and it's pretty simple. Again, we all know it, you know, the basic idea. But of course, again, the action of how to dovetail our particular nature, and everybody's different. And you think, you know, for example, I'll confess, I've always been very attracted to sweets. Okay. Since I was very young, you know. And I always felt embarrassed about it. You know, my God, you know, different things, you know, so on, you know. But then, some point along the line here, and I know I'm chanting and praying, and it seemed like it was an essential part of my psychophysical nature to some degree, you know. So finally, then our Ayurvedic doctor, a very credible person from Peru, he was saying, no, he said, you're so mental. And she just burns sugar. He said, the brain just uses sugar like anything, you know. So I guess I'm not a great worker of distinction. I'm not a great giver of charity, but I'm a great speculator. Boy, can I speculate, you know. Yeah. So, you know, that requires all this, you know, all this mental energy. And so the brain uses sugar, you know. But the thing is how to get it, because if you just chew bread properly, of course, the starch is digested by the enzymes in your mouth, and it becomes sugar even in your mouth. And so understanding, okay, I need sugar. It's my body. He asked me, he said, after lectures, do you have headaches? And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, because you're burning up, you know, so much sugar and oxygen. So after a class, he said, take some hot milk or some sugar. Yeah, okay. So anyway, this first thing, even to figure out our own psychophysical nature, which is going to be general. First off, we can decide if we're a man or a woman. Then after that, we can decide if we're Kshatriya, Brahmana, Vaishya, or Shudra, or Kshatrini, Brahmini, Vaishini, or Shudrani. Okay. And then, yeah, there's different things like that, you know, different nature, you know. Probably a lot of the big book distributors and everything else probably says basically they have a real Kshatriya tendency. Their nature is to go out and to fight with people and be brave and suffer attacks, you know, and somebody else may be a real Shudra, okay, so it's not their nature to do that. They feel, you know, hurt, but they may be fantastic artists, so they can do this incredible art, and then the book distributors, all the book distributors I know say that the art is one of the most important things they use in the book distribution, is just, you know, getting out there, showing pictures a lot of times, you know. So in general, we understand our psychophysical nature, and how that can be connected to Krishna. How? By the scriptures, there's descriptions, but especially, of course, by an acharya, like Srila Prabhupada. He trains so many other people how to engage people, what to do. He saw the situation, he decided he wanted to build temples. He didn't decide he wanted to introduce fire sacrifices on a large, regular basis at that point. You know? On and on like that, you know. When should Ayurveda be introduced? When should Vastu be introduced? You know? So Prabhupada gives like a general foundation, and we can understand at different times and places different things are useful, and how to dovetail these with Krishna's service. Yeah. And then after that, of course, our psychophysical nature. Then of course we start to come to our real, you know, deep feelings, you know, deep feelings. And then maybe Raganuga Bhakti and things like that. You know. So it's a basic point, but it's being, you know, repeated again. So any questions at this point? I have a few more things I could talk about here, but maybe we want to go ahead just to questions, comments. You know.
Okay.
Maharaj, you were talking about the propensity to lie and cheat and steal. This all comes from Krishna. He's the origin of all that. We know what a rascal he is. And you were saying that these things can be utilized, if dovetailed, in the service of Krishna. I was wondering if you could kind of give a practical example of lying, cheating, and stealing in the service of Krishna.
No, well, of course, Krishna and the cowherd boys, right? I mean, you can be one of Krishna's gang, You know, and of course, you know, the whole thing is to figure out how you can steal the milk and butter from the gopis. You know, it's like a big, you know, delightful game. The gopis are always trying to figure out, like, how to lock this up, how to hide that, how to put that there. And then Krishna and his friends are probably, you know, making up big engineering plans, how to pile this plank up, how to, you know, have somebody jump on this board and pop Dadi Mukha over the wall like that.
I'm talking about in this world, in this lifetime, yeah. Because the purport today
somebody's
is dealing all about, you know, dovetailing and utilizing and doing everything et karoshi et asnasi et jdahosa didasiat. But how do we lie, steal, and cheat
in Krishna? Well, usually we don't. That's the point. Yeah. Well, it's possible. You know, actually, what we do, for example, if we have artistic abilities and we make very, very beautiful paintings for Krishna, if we have good business sense, we can say that's not going to work, this and that. So we can use all these, you know, kind of positive qualities in Krishna's service. But the lying, cheating, and stealing, specifically Prabhupada said, you know, if Krishna's standing next to you like he was with Arjuna, okay, then you can go ahead and you know, lie, cheat, and steal. But otherwise, we follow standard behavior for the most part. He told Hansa Duda, he's probably said these kind of things over the big acharyas. Famous letter to Hansa Duda, he said, you can tell a small lie for Krishna that will not later on be detected. Okay, so like somebody, maybe somebody, and you say, well, these books are all about bhakti yoga, this and that. And the guy says, yogurt? I love yogurt. And you tell him, well, this is all about bhakti yogurt. You're going to love this book, Bob, you know. And so the guy takes the book and he goes and buys it, you know, and stuff. And he says, this is not about yogurt, you know. But then he reads it or something and actually comes back and becomes benefited, you know. Now back, he may come back and say to you, hey, you know, you sold me this book about you know, yoga or something, and I wanted a book about yogurt. You can say, well, my goodness, I just didn't understand. I'm sorry, you know. So, okay, a small lie like that, Prabhupada's saying, that's okay. You know, if we see clearly what the purpose is, what the benefit for the purpose is, then we have enough intelligence. So. But until we become big acharyas, then we should, you know, watch out for the big ones like, you know, casting entire worlds into chaos and robbing nations and that kind of stuff. You know. And, yeah, so that's it. You know, the small lies and that kind of stuff in Krishna's service, we can do that. But the bigger ones we should start to wonder about. And I know devotees. You know, when the mother's party was going on, our Sankirtan leader, who later was gunned down by his criminal enemies and being chased by the FBI, everything else, he was a bank robber and stuff before he became a devotee. And then he became the Sankirtan leader. And of course he had such a motivational gang spirit. Yeah, let's go, this and that and stuff, you know. And they were doing this stuff, but it got out of hand. And it got to the point where he was like, you know, eternally married to five of the girls in the mother's party or something like this and that. And he was justifying the whole thing in terms of, I'm an advanced devotee, I know how to, you know, adjust this in terms of Krishna, the service like that. So that's the point. You've got to be very careful. And generally Prabhupada says, small lie that won't be detected for Krishna's service. And always we do this in the association of other sane devotees in Prabhupada's books, you know, and then we should be pretty safe. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I was muted. I want to say thank you. Very nice.
Okay, thank you.
I agree. You know, sometimes it may be applicable, but generally not.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't want to hear about news from Hawaii, how, you know, Narahari Das was arrested for...
You know, no, thank you.
His fourth bank robbery, he was caught. Yeah. All the rest of the money went to the DBT.
Maharaj, this list of all these great persons, the workers of distinction... Well, the conclusion is that unless they're dedicating such activities to the Lord, they cannot have any further results. Somebody may ask, well, what about the prominent atheists, you know, like Carl Sagan, Stephen Hawking? How in the world are they How are they getting fruit of results when they're such demons?
No, it says there can be no fruitful results. I mean, there can be fruits. You know, Prabhupada talks about that, that there can be temporary results. You know, that's one thing. Again, my Maya is like, you know, archaeology and that kind of stuff. So recently, I was just in the Chaco Valley. I had these sandals someone bought for me called Chacos. Okay, you know. Then I discovered this thing. There's this thing called the Chaco Valley, and there's a place in the Southwest America, United States, with the Pueblo Indians, the Navajos, Hopis. And it was a very sophisticated, you know, architectural structure. And then they started getting into the course and the investigation. They discovered it was aligned to the sun, it was aligned to the moon, and the other ones around it, maybe like five miles away, were also perfectly aligned and this and that. There's so many things, you know, they discovered, like, about that it apparently was a part of a very big ritual tradition. You know? The other side, there's a Hittite civilization which existed at the same time as Troy, and it was so big that actually they chased the Egyptians back into Egypt, you know, on and on. But it was completely forgotten. You know? And it was on and on like this. Somebody was digging a well, and he just went through this hole and came out of this tunnel, and they discovered like an underground city of something like about maybe like, you know, 5 and 15 miles of something big, you know, of like tunnels and big, you know, security doors, and the whole thing had been abandoned, and there was nothing like dead bones or anything there. It just had been very systematically just abandoned. And then why did it even exist? You know, underground city. So all these things, you know, they had their fruits, but then they're gone. Who were they? What were they doing? They had some fantastic, you know, abilities and everything else, and even some kind of religious and, you know, religious activities, but now they're just gone, you know. So that's the point, is there may be some temporary fruits like this and that, but within some time they're just gone, you know? Whereas if we dovetail with Krishna, then we become, you know, the stories we're reading in the Bhagavatam are like from previous Kali Yugas, from previous ages, you know, and stuff like that, you know, thousands and millions of years, you know, more than that, you know, eternal, you know.
Okay. Regarding fruits, sometimes there can be discussion of fruits that one can obtain through material fruits, and as you say, they're unlimited and temporary, and they have some level of enjoyment. But then there's also forbidden fruit, which one should never aspire for, even materially. And it's often said that the forbidden fruits, they spoil very rapidly.
Yeah.
Just like coming
with
a man's wife or something like that. You know, I mean, you make a plan and get the fruit of this, you know, illicit affair, and there may be some fruit, but that spoils very, very quickly. So even on the material sphere, they talk about fruit, which we recognize material and limited, but there's also forbidden fruit, which should definitely be avoided.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It seems like, you know, the whole, you know, world is designed to get us out of ignorance into passion, you know? And so then to become someone like, I mean, if someone comes back and said, I fought with Caesar, I fought with Alexander, you know, then people go, wow, you know, it's really incredible. You know, you were there, yeah, I was there, you know, so forth, so on. So in the mode of passion, and then passion, of course, the idea is to go to mode of goodness, and the mode of goodness, then one can say one can start to develop, you know, transcendent values. Yeah. So yeah, there's, you know, if people won't do anything else, then Krishna will, like, you know, give them some glorification. You know, people say that, it's just like Napoleon. They talk about him and they say, you know, that yeah, he was a terrible guy in many ways, but at the same time too, yeah, he did have good qualities, and so, you know, something about him was good, and let's extract that and go the right direction, then we'll go to the mode of goodness. One thing here is, if you look ahead here, I did this in a couple of minutes, the big picture, okay, that these, the first canto, of course, there's all this discussion about, you know, why the Bhagavad Gita was written, what its purpose is, and everything else. And the final conclusion is the main thing is Sukadeva Goswami, you know, talking to Maharaj Pariksit, like that. Yeah, yeah. And so we finished off Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit talking. And Sukadeva Goswami basically explained everything in three chapters, first three chapters. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, Sat, Chit, Ananda, pantheism, mysticism, monotheism. So everything is there. And he says, you have any more questions? And Maharaj Pariksit says, well, hey, you know, I'm not going to go anywhere and everything else. I'm definitely becoming purified. So please go on. And so in this chapter, he asked this question. O learned Brahmana, you know everything because you are without material contamination. Therefore, whatever you have spoken to me appears perfectly right. Your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating topics of the Lord. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the great demigods. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. So if at least we can understand this very well, how God is present, how God is always with me, how God is keeping things going, and in the end, how, why, you know, what's God going to do with it? If we've got that down, then we're basically just heading the right direction. So Maharaj Pariksit has very good questions. And then Sukadeva Goswami says, when Sukadeva Goswami was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energy of the personality of Godhead, he then systematically remembered the master of the senses, Sri Krishna, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. And this is 2.4.12 through 24, where he answers like that. And these are the verses we're on now. But it's interesting, it says that he systematically remembered the master of the senses. And Prabhupada says Sri Krishna, but probably the word here is Hrishikesh, like that. So again, Prabhupada's putting the conclusion in right from the very beginning, but in general the Bhagavatam itself goes slowly, you know, taking this from the beginning. Okay, who is the master of the senses? Who is the creator of this universe? One question comes up that now Sukadeva Goswami is kind of like putting Krishna in perspective. He's putting a frame on the painting. He's putting the painting on the wall. He's making sure the wall's the right cover. He's making sure that the furniture in the room actually is situated properly to see the painting. You know? So in these verses 12 to 24, he's really, you know, fixing clearly who he's talking about, how he's going to get the mercy to present these things. You know, and then he actually starts to talk about, you know, what is the Bhagavatam, how Krishna creates everything. So the question is, why didn't he do this in the first chapter? In the first chapter, he doesn't have too much in terms of invocatory prayers. He just goes right away to the process. You know, meditate upon Krishna and his expansion as a Bharat Rup. That's his answer, like that. Hear him chant about that. You know, so that's one question. But anyway, at least now he does take the time to really glorify Krishna and put him in perspective systematically. So what is that system? You know, we have to kind of know this when we start giving a class, when we start talking to somebody, or we're trying to generate our own proper consciousness to do some service, extended service. How do we, you know, describe, remember Krishna, you know, systematically? And there's a process. Yeah? Let's go ahead here. Yeah. Sukhavacha. So these are these are actually the prayers, and we can just kind of look at them quickly here because the Sanskrit is very indicative, very beautiful. Nama parasmai purushaya buyase sadudbhavastana niroda lilaya grita shakti pratyayaya dehinam antara bhavaya nupalakshana vartmane buyo namasad virginit shed sitsakam Asambhava kaikila sattva murtaye pumsam puna paramahansa ashrame diabastitanam anubragam dashushe. Radharani Express is passing by here. So you see again and again it has Namo Namaste. Namo Namaste Sri Rishabhaya Satvatam Vidura Pastayamuhu Kuyoginam. Yeah. So very, very beautiful prayers, and again Namo Namaste. Yeah. Brahmani Ramyasti Namaha. Yat Kirtanam Yat Smaranam Yat Ikshanam Yad Vandanam Yad Shravanam Yad Arhanam Lokasya Sadyo Vidunoti Kalmasam Tasmai Subra Subhadra Shravase Namo Namaha. So the beginning he's offering his obeisances, and this verse 2:4:15 is a very important verse, so it's memorized for Bhakti Baba. And again, Tasmai Subhadra Shravase Namo Namaha. Tasmai Subhadra Shravase Namo Namaha. I offer my obeisances to him about whom it is very auspicious to hear. So several verses like that. And of course he's describing different qualities about Krishna. So this is a whole systematic study. This requires to go back and look at this and maybe take like a few weeks and analyze how he's looking at Krishna. What qualities he's talking about in Krishna. 2:4:18, of course, is a famous verse. I'll memorize it. Kirata hunandra pulinda polkasa abhira shumba yavana kashadayaha yenye cha papa yad apashrayashrayaha sujanti tasmaya prabhavishnave namaha. That even the uncivilized people in the West can all become purified if they take shelter of pure devotees. And then it goes on like that. Bhagavan Vitarko Lingo Bhagavan Prasidati. Now he's no longer offering obeisances, now he's asking for mercy. Prasidatam me Bhagavan Satvam Pati. Se Mukunda Bhagavan Prasidatam. Se me Rishinam Rishabha Prasiditam. So he goes on asking for the mercy of the Lord. Lankrishista Bhagavan Bachangsi me. And so finally he says specifically, the mercy I want is for him to decorate my speeches. Namastasmai Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vedase Papur Jnanam Ayam Somyam Yanmukum Amburu Hasham. After my obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva, hey, come back here, who compiled the Vedic literatures, the pure devotees drink up the nectarine transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. And the chapter finishes, my dear King Brahma, the firstborn, being questioned by Narada, exactly apprised him on this subject as it has been directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who is impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his birth. So you can see, it seems that these verses and everything else, they're meant to be chanted. They're meant to be taken into our heart, our intelligence, emotionally. You know, maybe we are all pygmy midget intellects, our own little ant-like consciousness. You know, if we can actually maybe even take this one series of prayers into our heart and our intelligence in one lifetime, we may be doing good. You know, whereas great personalities like Bhaktisiddhanta may have great palatial, you know, intellects. And this may form one little beautiful door into a bigger room, you know, of the intellectual, you know, bhava, appreciation, perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So very, very beautiful prayers, and looking back at them from a distance and analyzing them and chanting them. Of course, this would be wonderful, like a whole, like a PowerPoint show, you know, chanting these, chanting the verses, chanting them over in chorus and music. And as he's asking the Lord who is like this, the Lord who is like that, having different images come in, you know, such a wonderful, fantastic, service, you know, that we can do. So that's our kind of appreciation for this verse and the perspective. And thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, and we hope everybody has a very, very happy New Year on Sunday. Any final comments, questions, complaints here?
Maharaj, I was just going to say, it was really nice that you went over the Bhagavatam like this, where we're at. It really puts us in perspective. Thank you.
Ah, okay. Otherwise, we can't see the forest from the trees. Where's the forest? Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very nice.
Okay, Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
Thank you, Gurudev.